welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 382 for Wednesday, the 9th of October, 2013. My name is Martin Darlington. I am in the north of Wales. With me across the pond in California is Mr. James Race.
That would be me.
That is indeed. And for both of us, it's actually Tuesday, the 8th of October, so we will have completed the recording by the target date, which is brilliant.
Wait. It's not Tuesday, the 8th of October.
No, actually, you're wrong. I'm wrong, isn't it? It is Wednesday, the 9th of October. Do you know what? I don't even know what day of the week it is.
Oh, well, welcome back to the Jim and Martin show. Martin and I have
been... I'm just going to hit rewind. And this is episode number 382 for Wednesday, the 9th of October, 2013. My name is Martin Darlington. I'm in the north of Wales. With me across the pond in California is James Race. And it is indeed Wednesday, the 9th of October today. Anything you've heard previously was a hack by the CIA to try and discredit us in case we were, you know, in any way endangering homeland security.
I have no rebut. Actually, you know, it's Thursday in Sepang, Martin.
Yep, it definitely is. By which time, Mark Marquez might be bent over Race Direction's desk, having a very good spanking, being told you're a very, very naughty boy. He's not the Messiah. He's a very naughty boy, as Matt Oxley, very humorously tweeted earlier this week.
Oh, I kind of miss doing shows with you, Martin. All right, folks. It is indeed Jim Race and Martin Darlington, myself in the northern part of California, Martin Darlington in the northern part of Wales.
Yep.
My helicopter pilot friend. We are about to give you the latest news into what's going on. May have some interviews. We'll get to that a little bit later. In the meantime, we did, as you guys certainly heard in last week's show, I got caught up, and that was for the donators and subscribers to the show. And we did the show on Sunday, so it's only been a few days, today being Tuesday. No, sorry.
But we have had a donator.
We have had a donator. No new subscribers. That's fine. Big John Hart.
Big John Hart. The man has donated again.
The man with whom Martin has a constantly ongoing bet as to something or other in the top tier ranks of MotoGP. Have you guys squared any of that up yet?
Basically, we've agreed that John's much bigger than me, so we quit.
Okay.
And he has guns. He's a police officer, so mm-hmm. He has guns.
Yeah. You guys are stuck on that.
No, the plan is I'm going to turn up, drink all the beer he owes me, and then address him as good Constanoon afterball. But Big John is a frequent and regular donator, contributor, and huge friend of the show in every sense, because I saw the photos of when you and Jules met him, and it's like, yeah, John's one of those guys, right? If he pulls you over on whichever highway it is that goes through Mississippi and says, do you know what speed you're doing? You go, no, but I guess I was definitely speeding, and I'm very happy to pay the fine and polish your car for you, because I could imagine John could be quite scary.
Do you know what speed you were going? Any speed you say I was going, officer.
Yeah. Whatever you say. Yeah. Whatever you say. And we'll all agree to that.
Yep. Thank you very much, John. You can donate to the show. You can subscribe to the show. You can do so through the motopodcast.com fan page, or actually motopodcast.com page itself on the internet, www.motopodcast.com. Left-hand side of the page, about halfway down, there'll be a couple of links. You'll see, and we'll talk later in the show about it. I was talking at Harry speed, wasn't I?
No. Yeah, that's great.
Just a quick errata. We have been getting a bit of feedback on the last couple of shows on sound quality. And we appreciate you guys writing into us and letting us know. Something like that. Martin is our resident sound effects expert. We are working on bringing that back up to par, and we are listening to you. So thank you for the feedback. It's an iteration. We made some changes in the show with the people who are working on some things. So we'll do our best to get that back, because we know that you guys appreciated it when we got it up to that very high standard we were holding before. Some listener feedback we'll run through here. Just a reminder, if you'd like to write into us at the show and have us discuss your thoughts, ideas, disgruntles, whatever, you can do so by writing to us on email at motopod@motopodcast.com. And that email will go to all of us hosts, the ever-growing menagerie that it seems to be becoming.
And I would like to make a point that if people want to make a specific critique or criticism or suggestion to an individual host, you can write to Jim at Motopodcast or Martin at, or in fact, no, you're Race at Motopodcast.com, aren't you?
Yep.
Martin at Motopodcast.com, etc. But if you do it to Motopod, then we all get to read it, and it's much funnier when we can see who's slagging off who. But no, I mean, feedback is always welcome. I mean, it's very, very, very small proportion we get that's negative, but that's welcome as well, because particularly when, and most negative stuff I've seen over the years I've been doing this has been someone who absolutely loves the show. They just say there's one aspect that annoys me, whatever. And we have, you know, tried to adjust ourselves and adapt to our audience. So if there's one thing that annoys you, write in, let us know what it is, and we will try and eradicate it to make your listening pleasure seamless.
Although I have noted that on Twitter lately, our listeners have been quite enamored with having more Brits and Aussies on. And they said, you know, not anti-US, but we don't want to use the term eradicate at that point, Martin, because then both myself and Jules would be gone.
No. When I say eradicate the things that annoy us, I'm not in talking about individual hosts. Yes. Terminate with extreme prejudice, I think was the phrase as they used to use in James Bond.
Indeed. Why don't you dive into some of this and I'll throw my two cents in.
Well, yeah, we had Mike Moynihan from Lake Louise in the US.
Canada.
Sorry, in Canada, of course. touchy. Mike, a long-time friend and contributor to the show, he suggested, and when I was reading, I thought, do you know what? He's got a point here. He said, how do they know that Danny's traction control cable, this is, we're talking about the Oregon race and the incident, had been damaged by Mark Marquez touching it? Surely it's more likely it was damaged in the subsequent crash, considering his bike flipped itself in the end, slammed itself back into the ground. And you came back with a very valid point that, because Mike got into sort of, he said, look, I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, and then immediately put forward a conspiracy theory, that actually within HRC, it's kind of keeps everyone happy if you say, no, Danny didn't crash because, you know, he was feeling under pressure, he crashed because something was broken, and Mark ran wide and everyone's happy. But you pointed out that with the telemetry, they can tell exactly when it was damaged. So it was kind of like, yeah, probably. I mean, it's the old thing, isn't it? You know, it's as dumb to disbelieve every official press release as it is as dumb to believe everyone. You know, sometimes they are actually telling the truth, and they probably were in this case.
You have to read between every line and every press release and every tweet.
Yeah.
And every Facebook posting that comes out these days. And take everything with a grain of salt and basically interpret. In fact, it frustrates me when, because there are so many communication mediums for teams and riders and everything, that people, there are some people that take everything as gospel. And you're like, oh man, come on.
But if you did that, you'd have to be believing lots of contradictory facts.
Oh, I know. And as new media picks up more and more and becomes, because of things like Twitter, for example, where you get instantaneous news, we'll talk about that some more in a moment, you really got to sift. And it makes it easy for anybody to kind of come up with ideas. And that's why I hope that we kind of are a little bit balanced and look at these things, because we have long-term experience, to be able to interpret them to where they're at least somewhat closer to reality. Anyway, so Mike, waving hi to you, man. Got your email back from you. Thanks, love you, dude. Someday Mr. Miller and I will get up there and ski our brains out. So love to come visit. You had something from Ian Baller.
Yeah, this was, if anyone has seen the BSB races from last weekend, and we will briefly cover them later on, Shaky Byrne was injured 2 weeks ago at Assen, quite badly injured and hurt, and was having, I don't know if he was having to be, but he was being lifted on and off his bike by his mechanics to get him out at this last weekend's races at Silverstone. And Ian was saying, should he really been allowed to race, considering he had to be lifted on off his bike? And Ian's concern was a very valid one, that in the event of a crash, would he be able to get himself off the track? Now, my response was, first of all, before he's allowed to race, I would imagine BSB will run a similar system to MotoGP. And if we think about Cal Crutchlow last year, when he broke his foot / ankle, I can't remember which, I think it was ankle, wasn't it?
Or your demigod Lorenzo in 2008. Or,
exactly. Yeah. And the doctors make them conduct a series of tests. I remember Cal describing in painful detail, which we had on the show last year, you know, he had to do 20 toe lifts, stood on his heels, then 20 going up onto tiptoes. He had to run across the surgery a few times, you know, do press-ups and all this sort of thing. So I'm sure Shaky would have had to do that to pass. And the fact that he's being lifted on and off the bike might be the easiest way to get him on and off. That doesn't mean he can't get on and off it. I'm pretty certain, given the way he rode that bike through two long races in the same day, yeah, I'm pretty certain he could have crawled or jogged or walked or even run off the track if he, you know, crashed and hadn't done any subsequent damage. If he had, then it's kind of a moot point anyway.
Yeah.
So, but thanks for the point, Ian. It was well made, and it was one of those things where you do wince and you see him, but incredibly courageous.
Yeah,
by Shaky Byrne.
The one clip that I saw, because I haven't watched BSB yet, of him walking out to his bike for qualifying, it totally reminded me of Lorenzo going out with his crutches to get on his bike. And I remember him getting lifted off after a particular race in the garage one year. And it was just like, oh, God damn, that looks like it hurts. Yeah.
The worst one, and this was the one I always refer to, as this is what turned me on to Lorenzo as a character, was the China 2008, where he stalled it on the start of the warm-up lap. And the only way to start it was bump started. So he started running on two broken feet and legs. And it's like, and I remember Julian Ryder saying the mechanics had run out to help him because the race hasn't started. That's perfectly legit. And when they were running back into the pit lane, they ran past the booth where him and Tony B. Moody were in the days where Eurosport could afford to send their correspondents to the Far East. Mm-hmm. And they said the mechanics had tears in their eyes. They were like, that's not right.
Yeah.
That 20-year-old kid should not be doing that to himself. But, you know, hey, they're a different breed. Well, how many times have we said it?
Yeah, well, you can also remember the things that we would do at 20 we'd never do today, huh, Martin?
Yeah. Like eat a whole bag of wine gums in 10 minutes. Yeah.
I'm going to leave that one to you.
Crazy bastards.
All right. So one of the things we have coming this weekend, obviously, with MotoGP going to kick off in the Far East, that being Malaysia, is the beginning of the weekend, that being Thursday, that being, Martin, probably a couple of hours from now when you and I are talking, that being my Wednesday afternoon, your late Wednesday evening, which means it is afternoon, midday in Sepang. And the trial.
Yeah. Marquez and Pedrosa set to attend a race direction hearing. The incident, it goes on. It's interesting. It's fascinating to watch that an awful lot of the opinions that fall on either the blame side or the complete non-blame side, are kind of generally delineated by fandom.
Yep.
The Pedrosa fans, if you can find any, and the Lorenzo fans, some of them are saying, yeah, that's it, right, Marquez, it's once too often, he's got to be slammed. Well, the Lorenzo fans and the Pedrosa fans are obviously hoping that he has the points taken off him because it helps their men in the race for the title. The Marquez fans are going, this is absolutely ridiculous. And then I think the rest of us are somewhere in the middle just saying, hang on a sec, look, yes, it's typical Marquez, in the sense that he was running very close to the guy in front. And we've seen him do this all season. He's done it with Lorenzo and Pedrosa. He nearly hits them and ends up generally penalizing himself by having it run wide. In this case, he ran wide as well. Whether he clipped that cable or not, it rather looks like he did, you know, but this was not slamming into Lorenzo on the last corner at Jerez.
No.
This certainly wasn't slamming into Pol Espargaró last year, or worse, on the free practice session at Phillip Island, slamming into poor old Willerott, Ratapart Willerott, when he absolutely creamed him. You know, to me, this is more Marquez being very, very keen and aggressive, but not overly, and just more Pedrosa luck.
Yep.
Like, bad. You know, maybe he gets a couple of penalty points, but I really don't think there's any grounds for anything more. But the one aspect I think of it as, HRC seems to be polarizing into the Marquez camp and the Pedrosa camp. The only person coming out of it smiling is Lorenzo, because he's like, hey, you two fight each other.
Well,
that's great.
I think what's going to happen, in my idea, and I don't want to belabor this because we'll have more information next week after the verdict comes down, if you will, I think the heat of the moment after that race probably caused a rift, but I have a feeling they're going to come back together again, because it's in HRC's best interest to have a cohesive team there. As we wind down through these last three races, while there may not be team orders, there are going to be some things that may need to be done to optimize the chance for them to take home a world championship. And certainly the manufacturer's championship is up for grabs as well. So we shall see. I look forward to it. You're absolutely right. It's definitely one of those things that polarizes people, but you know, it'll happen. We'll see what comes out of it. This next part is kind of cool, and it's been going on for a while, and it's somebody that we've known in the paddock for some time. You start with this, and I'll throw my bits in.
Well, yeah, this is from David Emmett's website, motomatters.com, just saying Gigi Dalligna, who is the current head of Aprilia Racing, and many of you who watch World Superbikes would have seen him over the last few years with his very coutured little beard and shock of silver hair, overseeing Max Biaggi's World Championship run last year. Current head of Aprilia Racing, earlier this year, strong rumours started to appear that Ducati were going to get him, bring him in as after Prezioso was promoted, moved. Then it appeared that no, he's not. He's going to stick with Aprilia because they're going to give him the MotoGP effort. He's going to come across the MotoGP paddock and drive that one forward. Now it would appear that Aprilia are going to likely to impose fairly tight budget restraints on the MotoGP effort, whereas Ducati apparently are saying, hey, open checkbook and a very free hand in reorganizing the Ducati team. Yes, he will have to answer to Helmut Bogmeier. I think I've got that right.
Close.
But he will run the team. And it's interesting because one of the quotes that David mentioned in the article was Nicky Hayden saying, since Filippo Prezioso left, there's been a lack of guidance. We've lacked a strong hand on the tiller, and that's what we need back. Dovi has been saying, yeah, the problem is the engineers, because the guys that are paid to fix the problem haven't fixed the problem. So to me, that means they're the problem. Now, that's quite an aggressive thing to say, you know. But maybe if he – I think this could be a temptation that he struggles to resist.
Well, and it continues too, because the word is that there was a counteroffer from Aprilia to open up to more of a free hand for Gigi. But then there is also stuff coming back from Ducati. So there's a bit of a betting war going on. Now, that being said, Max Biaggi, just a few hours ago, or maybe two at this point, tweeted, and this is a really bad Google translation. I should point that out because he did it in Italian. He said, it is now certain that Gigi Dalligna Number one racing division, Aprilia Ducati will be a man today. Good luck for this new adventure.
Now, to me, that implies that he's going to Ducati.
Yes, it does.
Hmm. The other thing I think is with Audi's backing, and Philip Morris's sponsorship, although, again, David points out that whilst they've signed up for next year, Philip Morris, the Marlboro group, are becoming increasingly impatient for some tangible return on their investment. In other words, they want Ducati to be at the front again. I wonder if the final thing that swings it, and I don't know Gigi Deligne, and I don't know anything about his character, but I suspect a very, very large salary offer and the offer of freedom of movement, freedom of decision-making might just swing it.
Gigi is a very nice guy with a killer collection of watches. he's worked with an awful lot of people over the years, including on the Ducati side, and he's worked with Troy Bayliss as well. Was in MotoGP. He has been all around the paddocks of the top end and top tier teams. A little bit in World Superbike, Johnny Ray and Leon Haslam, sounds like they have both re-signed. Not resigned, Martin. You have to have that dash in there, by the way.
Yeah. They both resigned and decided to join Pata Honda. Yes.
Pata Honda for 2014, and I believe those contracts might extend a bit further. They are hoping for a vastly improved bike. Now, as everything's been buzzing, and even Honda have been saying it, a derivative of the RCB 213 customer bike may well make its way in about 75 euro, 200,000 euro trim to the World Superbike paddock, providing it can be homologated. Think back.
In the news I saw today, I say it will not be debuting at the Milan Bike Show because these were the rumors. These rumors about this bike have been running all year.
Well, no, Martin, the rumors about this bike have been running for the last 15 years.
Yeah, that's true, actually, yeah.
We've had front covers of MCN I don't know how many times in winter with artist renderings of it.
Yes. This is what we think the new Honda V4 may look like. And then 6 months later, the Honda V4 is apparently nearing production. Yes.
Wonderful.
And now it looks like this.
Bold new graphics on the artist rendition.
But I do think, I think this finally puts to bed the Johnny Ray to MotoGP rumors. I think Johnny's decided that his future lies in the World Superbike paddock. And you got to take your hat off to him. The kid has been Honda. I can't think of another make he's ever ridden. Mm. I really can't. He was Hansbury Tenkata in World Supersport. No, I think the kid has always been Honda. So hats off to him for sticking with it. And I quite agree with it. You know, you'd be an idiot to sign for 2014 without having a, hang on a sec, you're going to bring out a brand new Fireblade or whatever you're going to call it in 2015. Yeah, I don't want to be here for the next year and then get dropped and you bring in some kid on the bike that can actually compete. So, you know, and hopefully, fingers crossed, Leon, I mean, it's weird. Leon has his personal life is going brilliantly. He's got his second kids on the way. You know, he's seems to be loving it.
Well, Johnny just had a kid.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Both daddies.
Yep.
But, you know, Leon is just, I mean, both team riders breaking a femur in the same year. It's like, geez.
Yeah.
What have you got to do?
Femurs seem to be the fashionable bone to break this year. Camry as well. It was, you know, kind of interesting, Martin, for World Superbike at Laguna because we had a lot of guys missing. And so we filled them in with our Americans who did not do badly. Thank you very much. All right. So if the V4 shows up, we'll have to see. You know me, I've been doubting Thomas about that, this thing going on for a long time. It sounds like it definitely is going to happen for the customer bikes for MotoGP. Whether that will wend its way into the World Superbike paddock is hard to say because they don't have a lot of time to produce enough bikes to homologate it to run it in World Superbike.
But they only need, is it 250, 250, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's 500.
Or is it 500? Okay. But I'm not being funny. Honda could buy those themselves.
Yeah, but I don't think it works that way. Well, okay.
No,
I take
that, not officially. They just, you know.
I take that back because if we look back at the history of World Superbike, we look at a bike like the Petronas, where they actually made a shitload of motorcycles. They didn't get it to the public. They're like sitting under, you know, lock and key somewhere in Malaysia or in the Europe. So,
or HRC, you go to McDo and say, we'd like you to do a bit of promotional work for us. You just need to come along and sign some photographs. We're going to pay you $15 million. Oh, by the way, we need you to buy 45 motorcycles. What you do with them is up to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, there's ways around it. I'm not suggesting that Honda would do anything like that, please, before the lawyers get involved. Oh, my God, they're quite litigious, aren't they? Honda, I'm really sorry. I love you.
He does. Almost as much as he loves Lorenzo.
Yes.
In other words,
for Yamaha. Oop, shit, it slipped out again.
World Superbike news, the whole Evo thing. We knew this was coming.
Martin, walk
us through that.
Well, they are going to introduce, World Superbikes are going to introduce for 2014 an optional Evo class. This is very, very similar to BSB in 2010. You had the optional Evo class.
Okay.
Sorry, no, you're right. In 2011. In 2012, it became compulsory.
Yep.
So this is going to be introduced optionally in 2014. And I say it looks increasingly likely. I think it's a done deal now. It will be mandatory for 2015. However, they're not going quite as far as BSB did. There will be very extensive modification allowed to the chassis of each bike, but very limited modification allowed to the engines, although they're not going to have an enforced spec ECU in the way that BSB have.
Please include that word because we know how many things can change in the course of a year.
But what's fascinating as well, and I was reading about this both on David Emmett's excellent website again, motormatters.com, and through the World Superbike website, that previously the manufacturers hadn't been involved in the consultation about how do we make the racing more affordable whilst maintaining a level playing field and exciting racing.
Unlike MotoGP.
Unlike MotoGP. So Dorna have brought their MotoGP experience where they consult with ERTA and MSMA and the rest of them, and they brought it across and they said, look, let's talk to the manufacturers. Well, what do you want? And this is what they've come up with. They said, look, we think this is the way forward. For anyone who doubts that this can work, please try and get hold of last weekend's BSB races, particularly each last two laps, and it will convince you this can work. This can make for fantastic racing. And if we can get enough bikes out there, you know, it all comes down to the fact you need, if you've only got six bikes on the grid, you haven't got a race.
Right.
When you've got, you know, 40, you've got an axe murderous class, like we saw in the first year of Moto 2. So we're looking at somewhere between 20 and 30. If we can do that regularly, we have got proper racing, and those bikes stay relatively together. We've had some brilliant races in BSB over the last couple of years. Yeah, it really is. It's breathtaking. So fingers crossed. Yeah, World Superbike's being dumbed down a little bit, I suppose, in comparison to MotoGP. That was inevitable when Dorna took over control of both of them. But that doesn't mean it's not going to be hugely entertaining.
No, oh, I agree. So we'll have to see how that comes to fruition. A lot of it depends upon what we see coming from the manufacturers, because if they are going to be changing the class, Martin, much like we were just talking about the Honda potentially making over to World Superbike, that might encourage the other manufacturers to bring in higher spec machines. Because if they don't have the advantage of being able to get into the engine, it might spur innovation in a way that would bleed back down to the consumer category. So
that Elf hub steering bike, it's going to come back.
Perhaps. You never know.
Maybe not.
Well, if we look, Martin, at what was going on back then with, as far as materials went, that thing was so overbuilt, it was nuts. And what they're doing with metallurgy these days, I think they might be able to pull something like that off in a more lightweight fashion, because that bike was a bit of a pig. Carrying on, MotoGP provisional, massive, huge, the biggest one I think we've had in years, is out for 2014. And Laguna Seca, as we mentioned, I don't know, a few shows back, because we kind of had, well, it was a well-known rumor within the paddock, is not going to be there for 2014.
That is seriously disappointing.
It is a drag. But from a financial standpoint, it's really something they had to do. I mean, the organization, Laguna Seca organization, owes Dorna at this point $2.5 million, and to put on the race next year, that's another $800,000 on top of that bottom line, not even counting anything to Dorna. And it just money wise hasn't been making sense. It costs them a bunch of money to put this thing on. That being said, Jill Campbell, she's the head boss lady of Laguna Seca. She said, since that original announcement that they weren't going to be there, she'd still love to have them back. But that's when or if it becomes financially viable and stable. So we'll have to see. She definitely loves having bikes at the track, and the track is built for bikes. So
what might help Laguna, one of the things was the World Superbike Round, which was a great success this year, is they're thinking of moving that to the July slot that MotoGP have vacated, which is a race weekend they can use. Because one of the problems about the September Laguna race was it coincided with the NFL season.
Yep.
And you got two Californian teams who were dragging potential spectators away. And because let's face it, unfortunately, taking the big picture in the US, NFL is a bigger deal than bike racing.
Yeah. And while the racing itself at the World Superbike Round was a great success, attendance wasn't that great. So that needs to get, that needs to get kicked up. And I say that with a lot of positivity, because attendance was pretty bad, to be honest. And so that needs to be dealt with and brought forward, and perhaps moving the date into that slot if they can do it, because shuffling around dates is not an easy thing to do within any of these international racing organizations.
It's not, but it can work. I mean, I was looking at some figures earlier today, and a lot of the European rounds have seen an increase in attendance at the track itself, between 5 to 15%, whereas the two American rounds that had previous years to compare to, obviously, Austin was a new one, but Indy and Laguna were down 5%. Now, it's not a huge amount, but it's not great when you're looking to grow.
Yeah, well,
if your projected attendance is a growth of 5% and you actually get a drop of 5%, yeah, you're looking at 10% down. So,
well, if you pay any attention to international news, we're all kind of a bit skint over here.
Hey, join the club. We've been there for years.
Yeah, I know. We're working our way down. But what we need to do is definitely go out and support the races. The one thing that I did note in this schedule, Martin, being so jam-packed for the year, is it looks like that month-long mid-season break that we had between Laguna and I guess it was Brno, right, has tightened well up.
Well, I don't know. You've got a month. You've got a month between Germany and Indy. You've got 28 days. You've got 4 weeks.
Yeah.
You've got a four-week gap, which I hate. I hate that gap. Hate it.
The riders love it.
No, I don't give a shit about the riders. I'm paying their wages. Disgusting. There's no football on. There's no bike racing. All I have to do is garden.
You know, Twitter has made it a lot better, because then we get to see them doing stupid shit like us regular people.
Yeah, that's true. standard thing. We're starting at Qatar earlier this year, 23rd of March. The riders have already started criticizing that, because that time of year you get this dew dropping during the evening, which saw a lot of crashes this year. Assen, 28th of June. That's a Saturday race. Now, Jerez is still subject to contract because they're broke. But apparently they're very confident that will go ahead. 28th September, Brazil. Mm-hmm. And that's subject to homologation, which supposedly they're likely to get. The only other one is Argentina. Now, there've been rumors recently that it's homologated. They've got the money to pay for it. But again, there's still this issue that Repsol are saying, we may not be going there. Now, I would suggest if Repsol don't go there, no Honda bikes are going there. And there might be an awful lot of Honda bikes next year on that grid with the production racer. So there may be a bit of an issue there because of Argentina's novel idea of their government of, we're really broke. I tell you what, you know that oil company that came in from Spain? Let's just tell them we own it now and not give them any money.
Well, even a toilet paper factory.
Yeah. No. That was not Venezuela where they are now rationing toilet paper.
I believe so. Just one sheet.
Should do that in this house.
You do live.
No, seriously, we go through. I don't know what it is.
Martin, I live with two women too. Yeah. I understand. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out for myself. I think of the two South American races, I think I'm going to try and wrangle Jules. Jules, if you're listening, 28th September, let's go to Brazil. I think that would be interesting, especially with them, you know, continued preparations for the World Cup. Argentina is going to be far too close to COTA, which I'm sure we'll be at. So we'll have to see there. And now this gives everybody here at Motopod the opportunity to try and figure out where the hell we're going to be as the year goes on, try and cover as much as we can. Enough about the schedule, Martin. More to go.
PBM Racing have announced that Damien Cudlin, who is everyone's favorite standing rider, because I think Damien must have ridden in every bike racing series in the world. He did, in fact, I'm sure I heard, he appeared in the single-cylinder series held in Siberia on a Lada-adapted bike. I don't know. But he's going to ride the second bike for PBM on the three flyaway rounds. So he is this weekend at Sepang, then Motegi, then Phillip Island. Michael Laverty, having moved up to the ART bike in the team, as Yoni Hernandez got bumped up to Pramac Ducati to stand in for Ben Spies. So, good for PBM. And, Damien Cudlin, it doesn't matter where you send him, he just does really quite well.
Yeah, Michael wasn't too pleased with Danilo Petrucci punting him off on the first lap of the prior race and his first race on the full ART bike. Martin, you were talking to somebody here about a new series that's coming up, just briefly here.
Yeah, no, this is, I was on Twitter and I decided to follow at Mini GP UK. That's at Mini, every word's a capital except for the INI of Mini. And got a message back saying, oh, thanks for the follow. Then I got a private message or direct message, whatever they call them, saying, hello, mate, it's Chris Phipps here. And now, Chris was a door gunner when I was flying in the Army Air Corps years ago. He was one of our door gunners, and he's gone on. He's been an Apache pilot. He has been all over the world. He's now an instructor, and he's based just up the road from us. Now, he has a kid who races, a young kid. I don't know how old Chris's kids are, but they're somewhere between 8 and 14. And they've got a group of them got together and they're trying to get a four-stroke youth racing series going in the UK. Two strokes have got far too expensive. No one else in the world is racing them. So they've looked at the Spanish series and they're going to look at the same bike that they use, which is kind of Moto 3 compliant, but obviously smaller CC. The aim is to make it affordable, open to as many people as possible, boys, girls, it doesn't matter who, and take away, as Chris described it to me, the inevitable prospect of the rich kids' parents spend more and ensure their kids win all the time. So it's commendable, difficult. They've got a lot of help behind. They've got a lot of support. And we are hoping, I'm hoping, certainly, to interview Chris and some of his colleagues in the early off season, so in the next month or two. But the season they're going to run is they're looking at a race a month from March to September next year, but they need riders. So if you've got an 8 to 14-year-old kid, it doesn't matter what the kid wants to do. If you want them to be right, let's be pushy dads here. Let's be honest about it. Mia doesn't realize this. She's getting strapped to a mini bike next year, whether she likes it or not. I don't care about your fingernails. I don't care about your makeup coming off in the wind. Get the helmet on and race, you know. But it's interesting because a friend of ours has got a very, very sporty daughter, and she's fascinated by it. Her mother has told me that if I ever get her into bike racing, she will kill me. But, you know, it's one of those things. So have a look at MiniGP UK on Twitter. And, you know, if anyone out there is interested, drop me a line. I'll put you in touch with Chris and see where we can go from there.
Yeah, I think it's minigpuk.co.uk if you want to look at it online. Cool stuff. I did notice that the Young Riders Fund was also involved with that. So that's a good organization of some gentlemen that I know to help push that forward.
Yeah, they're credible. They're credible.
Yeah. And a little bit of free news, and we may have an interview, I'm not sure here, but those of you that are fans of the show obviously know Mark Miller. Hope I might get him on this week. I'm not sure. It all depends upon how I can corral him, because he is like a big bowl of Jell-O. Thank you, Mark. but himself.
He's saying he's wobbly.
He's a bit wobbly. Mark Miller and Brandon Cretu, who has been on the show before, two American gentlemen, through the graces of Splitlath Racing Team out of the UK, who has used Aprilias in the past for the BSB series, I believe Kawasaki and World Endurance Cup, and they actually got on the box there. Well done. Are going to be putting forth a pair of American motorcycles, Martin. Buell, strictly the 1190 RS, to participate in both Macau and, I believe, the Isle of Man TT. So American racers on American bikes. So we'll see if we can't get those interviews this week. If not, we will get them next week.
Jim, it was set up perfectly for you to say that we've got two American riders on American bikes, namely Harley Electric Glides.
No.
Or Fat Boys.
I will,
you know, that would have been.
I will very specifically mention that Buell is no longer under
anything to do
with Harley Davidson. These are strictly one-off racing bikes. And so those of you that still have that linkage between Harley and Buell, take that and toss it out the window. These are new iterations and very high performance machines. And I frankly, I have a feeling that those two lads may go quite well at Macau on this bike. The torque that comes out of those things are amazing. And that is, are a lot of stop and go corners. So we'll have to see how it goes.
Mm.
Yep. So take a listen to these if they're in here. If not, we'll move on to MotoGP.
Yep, we've got Sepang this weekend. You made a good point here, because I immediately said Sepang Honda track, and it's like, well, it's got those, that long straight with the 180 degree hairpin at the end of it, then another long straight, but it has also got some fairly fast sweeping corners. And as you point out, last time Rossi was on a Yamaha, he won there. In fact, this was the last race he won in MotoGP at all. But, geez, three years ago.
My God, it's forever, isn't it?
No, hang on. 4 years ago. No, yeah, three years ago. 2010, of course. Yeah. But it's likely to be a Marquez track, because everywhere seems to be. Then we go to Motegi next weekend. That's a very Honda track, given that they own it.
Can I point out that Motegi was not kind to Mr. Marquez in the past?
I don't know.
Sorry, not Motegi, Sepang.
Sepang. No, I was going to say Motegi was. Yeah, he went from last on the grid to win last year. Yeah. Motegi wasn't kind to Danny, but that was...
Sepang has historical issues with Mark. But anyway, carry on.
But then we go to Phillip Island, which is basically, none of us can remember whose track it is other than Casey Stoner's. Irrelevant what bike is on, Ducati, Honda, you know, Aprilia 125 Learner, it still seems to win it. So, for the Yamahas.
It was a Rossi track.
Was it?
Yeah. Well, it was a Yamaha.
I know. He won there. That's that was one of the ones where he overcame the. It was a Marco Melandri track for 1 year.
Yes, sir. In the wet.
I'm sure. Didn't Stoner win there 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12?
Yeah.
So then we have Melandri. So you've only left Rossi 4 years. Now, he might have won all four of those, but if it was a Rossi track, it hasn't been for a long time.
No.
Having said that, of course, Casey's not there anymore. So
I wonder if
that would be good.
I wonder,
my only concern is by then the championship's been decided.
It's possible.
Do you know what? I haven't got in front of me the gap.
Doesn't matter.
No. But it's, you know, basically Marquez needs to be beaten by preferably simply because I'm not saying this as Lorenzo fan, just to keep the title alive, he basically needs to be beaten by Lorenzo in the next couple of races.
Yeah.
Danny can come ahead of that if he wants. But if Marquez wins the next couple, it's going to be...
It's going to be tough. I mean, I believe he's 39 points ahead.
39 points.
And
yeah.
And so if you see, like, if you see Lorenzo Pedrosa 1-2, you're talking, what, 30 and then 15, 14, something like that. So,
He could be awarded it. Realistically, he could be awarded it in 2 weeks' time at Motegi at the Honda track.
Yep. We'll see.
That's not
hurt. Yeah, well, it'll make Valencia Valencia, won't it?
Sure.
Yeah. Moving on. World
Super- can't believe that's still on the bloody calendar for next year.
You know, I kind of like them to shift around a bit. For whatever reason, they like having the end of the season festivities there. World Superbike. We had a race from Magny-Cours. I have not got to watch all of this yet, Martin, so I'm going to let you drive this bus.
Okay, look, we had on Superpole, we had Tom Sykes, championship leader, just followed by Gintoli, who was the championship runner-up or second place man, very much home down. And Davide Giuliano did a cracking job to get on the front row. Then we had Eugene Laverty, Michel Fabrizio, Etten Badavini on the third row, Melandri, Davies, and someone, Philippe, which I presume is a wildcard rider. Never heard of him. Having said that.
That was Vincent Philippe covering for Leon Camier.
Of course, yes, because Leon Camier's injured. We had a shed load. Loris Baz was missing. Unfortunately, he's still in my fantasy road race team, which is why I'm not doing very well. We had Leon Camier missing. We had a bunch of people.
Yep.
Tony Elias qualified 11th.
Johnny Ray.
Johnny Ray out as well. But we basically just had shitloads of people standing in for other people. So it got quite confusing. But as soon as the race started, it got down to the old favourites. And we basically had Sykes, Melandri and Giuliano beating each other up initially with Gintoli and Laverty all in the mix.
But we have to point out that the entire weekend from day one when they arrived all the way through the weekend was changeable weather.
Oh, it was typical. It was like Le Mans MotoGP. It was, you know, it's going to be wet, it's going to be dry, it's going to be wet, it's going to be dry. Pretty much every day was affected by it. Race one was dry. Now, I've got to mention in race one, speaking of Tony Elias, he crashed and he just lost the front. As he slid off, he wiped out a following rider. He then leapt to his feet and ran up and started shouting at this other rider. He could see, look at him going, what the fuck? You know, you stupid little twat. Go away or I'm going to flatten you. Because this is little, because whoever the other rider was, I can't remember who it was now. It was one of the standing riders, I think. In fact, it may have been the very man we mentioned. I think it may have been Vincent Felipe.
Yeah, I believe so.
But whoever it was a lot taller than Tony Elias, which is, you know, most human beings are taller than Tony Elias, and some cats. And, you know, they sort of stood there with this kind of, well, why are you shouting at me? And it was just hilarious. Anyway, the race went on, and Tom Sykes did what Tom Sykes does, and he was pulling away, but he never quite lost Sylvain and Eugene chasing, who were really quite nicely tight to him, or Ginters was at least. And then Mark Aitchison crashed his Kawasaki ZX10R, or ZX10R, I should say. The bike stayed on the racing line, red flag. 18 laps gone out of the 23 planned. Boom, that's a result. And Ginters, who was a couple of seconds behind Tom Sykes, I personally don't think he was reeling him in. Ginters obviously felt he was. Went absolutely batshit, by all accounts. Really, really. And he's a lovely fellow, Sylvain Guintoli. But apparently this was a proper toys out the pram. I want to kill someone.
Well, I believe he was taking it. He was put his French background on the sideline for that and done a full on Brit.
Anglo-Saxon.
Yeah.
Oh, he was full on Anglo-Saxon on that one. I mean, obviously, chronologically, World Supersport came next, but we'll deal with that in a moment, because then we had World Superbike Race 2, which was just almost a carbon copy. Oh, yeah, we in the first race as well, we had lost Chaz Davies on a really strange crash, yep, which was a shame. And Jules Cluzel dramatically threw his bike at the scenery. His bike actually was awarded 8.6 for technical merit and artistic content. It did 3 triple salchos and a backflip.
Yeah, but they got dinged on the entry, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, no, he got clipped. Yeah. It wasn't completely his fault. Race 2, Leon Haslam went down unhurt. Or did he break down? I can't remember. Anyway, we had Tom Sykes led the way again, and this time he pulled the pin. I don't know what it is he can do, but he is just absolutely been so consistent this year.
Well, so look at it this way, Martin. I think this may have been a tactical decision, knowing that the weather was coming in. Tom has had issues in the past with maintaining his tires, and they were going with the softs, given the weather conditions, to run out of them near the end of the race. Well, with the weather coming in, he may as well pull the pin and gather a large gap if there is a possibility that the race is going to be called at a shorter distance.
Or they have to come in and change bikes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Or sorry, no, they can't change bikes in F1. Change wheels. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And that is indeed what happened. I mean, we had a fantastic battle between Eugene Laverty and teammate Sylvain Guintoli. They were, if Murray Walker had been commentating, it would have been a ding-dong battle. They were, one was in front, then the other. With about 3 laps to go, we started seeing white flags coming out, and the Steve Day, the commentator, was saying, "Oh," and they went to one camera, went, "Oh my God, look at that." And it was, you couldn't see through the camera. It was absolutely covered in rain. So then you started concerned, well, how much of the track is wet? Tom didn't seem to have a problem at all. Eugene and Sylvain were coming into one of the sharp right-handers. Sylvain had just taken the lead and was leading, but he locked the front and went down. Eugene went past him, and immediately he went down as well, at which point, almost instantly, red flags came out. Now, there's been a lot of debate. Did the red flags come out for the rain because of the crashes, right? It's not safe, stop them. Or did the red flags come out because there were 2 bikes in the racing line?
Now, is this conspiracy theory time again?
Do you know what? I don't know, but it is a point, isn't it? I thought most bike racing series had a rule. Yeah, if you're the one that causes the red flag, you can't benefit from that. Because, you know, just say you're, I don't know, say last year, pause.
I didn't catch this, but were there white flags being shown at the same time?
Yes.
Then it was not, the red flag was not for the crashes. It was for the rain. So theory debunked. If they just thrown red flags without white flags, that would have meant that...
No, the white flags have been out for a couple of laps.
Okay, then...
And then they went red.
Then it's for rain.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, at the end of the day, again, I mean, I think Ginters felt a bit robbed because he felt he could have remounted quicker than Eugene and got in for second. But he ended up third, Eugene second, Tom Sykes was given the win. And Tom is now 37 points clear of Eugene, 38 clear of Sylvain. So you got 2 teammates, 1 point between them as we go to the last round at Jerez. You've got to look at a pretty major disaster. Basically, you need Tom Sykes to have a double DNF.
Right.
for anyone to have a chance. And this thought led me to the conclusion that, wow, we could have, of the five World Series championships, MotoGP, Moto 3, 2, Moto 3, World Superbike, and World Super Sport, we could have three British champions.
Raise the flag. Get out the Queen.
Although we haven't had a MotoGP winner, race winner, let alone title winner, since Barrachine in Sweden in 1981.
Mm, wow.
Which is humbling. So, good for Tom Sykes. And speaking of champions.
Indeed.
World Super Sport. And I've got to, on behalf of Motopod, Sam Lowe's.
You saved it.
That's for you, son. Yeah, I've been dry for about 30 minutes now, and I thought, I've got to save that. Sam Lowe's.
An hour, Martin, unless you had one in the backup.
No, I'd started one before we started, so I had about half of one, which kept me going for a while. We had World Supersport standard qualifying. Keenan Sofwagli was pole, Sam Lowe's was second. It was either that way around or the other way around pretty much all season. Christian Iden, cracking job, got third.
Yep.
On QP. And that's how the race finished, when it was red flagged, when Christian Iden, of all people, crashed on his MV Agusta on the penultimate lap. There had been some brilliant ding-dong stuff going on between Keenan and Sam. And for all the venom that's been fired between the two, actually, to be fair, they haven't, but it's appeared, you know, Sam's come out with stuff and said, you know, Keenan's a rider I really respect, even though I don't get on with him at all.
It's gotten better, I think.
It's gotten better. And on the warm down lap, absolutely hats off to Keenan Sofwagli. Sam pulled up beside him and they shared what appeared to be a genuine
bro moment. Hug.
It was a real bromance thing. It was like, and it did, it felt like, okay, this was my torch, you can carry it now. You know, it was long, you know, the king is dead, long live the king sort of thing. And I just thought, really good sportsmanship. And we'll come on to it in a minute. I don't know what it is, but the Lowe's twins attract, that they're a bit Marmite, particularly in the UK. You either love them or you don't. And they attract a fair amount of criticism from some people. And I really don't understand it.
All right. So this is your opportunity out there in Motopod land, because Martin and I don't. So tell us what your thoughts are on the Lowe's lads, because
you look on Twitter and you will see people going, being really snippy about them. Now, Alistair Seely, I can kind of understand. If people don't know, Alistair Seely is a very talented British supersport rider who has a habit of knocking people off and then being quite derogatory about them, going, well, they shouldn't be going in my way, should they?
No,
ain't going that way. They're slower than me. Ain't going to knock right. Yeah. And it's like, well, dude, Sam and Alex Lowe's have never been like that. Yes, they're fast. Yes, they're aggressive on the track. But they always finish with a smile. They don't seem to let their egos go to their heads. You know, they genuinely have a lot of affection for each other and a huge amount of respect for their other racers. What is there not to like?
Well, I'm going to caution you, Martin, much like I cautioned Harry. If you spend too much time on Twitter, your perspective of the average fan will get twisted.
Yeah, my perspective of the average fan was fairly twisted already, to be honest. That's years spent around Rossi fans, but there you go. Yeah. I've just said, did I say that out loud?
I just sent a friend of mine this off to Italy. I said, you have to go to Tivoli and watch around from there. I said, they'll bound to have it on in one of his shrines. Okay, enough about world championship racing. How about some British Superbike? Because we had Silverstone up.
Just to follow up to the Sam Lowe's news, he is confirmed he's going to Moto2 for 2014, but we don't know quite yet which. It's possibly NGM Ford. It's possibly Speed Up, who are talking about coming back into Moto2. Yak Nitschewald allowed him to cancel his contract because they're going to MV Agusta for next year. in World Superbikes and World Supersport, and he wasn't convinced they were competitive. So we will be welcoming Sam Lowes into the Moto2 paddock. We may, as we heard a few weeks ago, be welcoming Alex Lowes into the MotoGP paddock. We don't know yet. That was the rumour. But Alex has had other fish to fry because he is chasing down a championship with Shaky Byrne in BSB.
And yeah, we already talked a bunch about Shaky, but results-wise, we can definitely fill you in.
Well, exactly. I mean, we talked earlier about Shaky's injuries. Yeah, they turned up at Silverstone. Shaky turns up with a one-point lead. Race one was the Lowes and Byrne show. Absolute ding-dong down to the last lap, at which point Alex Lowes does a poor Fuera, is it? I think Lorenzo calls it, yeah. Round the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And wins. Tommy Bridewell, very creditable third on the Milwaukee Yamaha. Race two, Shaky looks like he's lining up to do the same to Alex on the last lap. Again, the two of them absolutely glued together, miles out on the lead on their own. Alex actually holds him off, but Shaky, just on the drive out of the last corner, beats him to the line by 9/1000ths of a second. That's like a tire width.
Right.
Tommy Bridewell, again, came third. So for those of us who've got Alex Lowes and Tommy Bridewell in their BSB team, thank goodness, because it kind of offsets the disaster of having Loris Baz, who didn't actually race this weekend. So Shaky left, arrived with a one-point lead. He left with a one-point lead. We've got three race meeting at Brands Hatch in 2 weeks' time. It's Shaky's home track, but he's still injured. But Alex Lowe's attitude, I mean, the two of them shared a beautiful moment. They were on the crest of a hill at Silverstone, and there's not many hills at Silverstone, but the camera was looking up, sunset in the background, or the sun starting to go down, and it was just these two guys talking. Wow, wasn't that great? Both of them, big beaming grins afterwards.
You haven't been on the show in a while. You're waxing melodic.
Yeah, yeah. But it was fantastic, and you spell Seeley with double E.
Oh, sorry.
No, Jim's probably, yeah. Alistair Seeley in the British Super Sport race punted someone off, got very rude about him afterwards, was roundly criticised by pretty much everyone, and he's been docked 10 seconds, which drops him seven places. But I've got to be honest, I haven't been following BSS, so I'm not sure where that leaves the championship. But no, it's... BSB is coming down. Now, this is the first time the showdown's really kind of worked.
Yeah.
But I still think, you know, we could have had a season like this without it. I'm not sure this is really necessary, this showdown thing. Because I just feel sorry for everyone else. You know, the John Kirkhams and the Martin Jessops and the Martin Rutters.
Well, so the question...
What are they racing for?
The question being, Martin, is... Yeah, exactly. Is there a lack of motivation? The way to prove that the showdown isn't working would be to be up there, much like Kirkham was it last year?
Yeah.
And to be at the pointy end in the middle of the guys that are running for the showdown championship. So,
I mean, Josh Brooks has said this, the problem with the showdown is when you get to the showdown bit, when it splits off,
yeah.
He said it's only ever been the top two, maximum three mathematically,
right,
who are actually chasing the title. So it doesn't achieve what it wanted to achieve. All it was intended to do was keep what was happening at the front of both the race and the title race relevant on the back of Leon Camier winning the BSB championship in 2000, whenever it was, 9, was it?
Yeah.
Or 10. And he'd won it in like mid-August. And we had 3 months left of the season with... really sod all to do, but circulate and see who could come second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth, etc. And so that was the idea about it, behind it. Unfortunately, I think it was the next year, without the showdown, we'd have had the closest title finish, you know, for 15 years or something ridiculous. So yeah, it's difficult.
Tough decision. Wow. That's a bunch of info. And if we have the interviews in there, this will be a big old show, even if we don't. What else? So I am very much looking forward to Sepang this weekend. Yep. Our national season over here is done. You guys still have the big Brands Hatch meet over there. And I'm looking forward to that as well, because that's certainly going to be a decider, and having three races do it, and it's going to be fun as well.
Now, I'm guessing the flyaways, you guys actually get to watch races in the evening.
Oh, yeah. When it's in Asia, I'd love it.
Because I love it, but it is, I mean, MotoGP is actually very respectable. It's 9 o'clock Sunday morning, but obviously to get up for the Moto3, I'm going to be up at about 5:30.
Yeah, exactly. This is the one time of year where I can actually kind of relax. And to be honest, this year, Martin, I've been trying to take better care of myself, and so I've not been doing my usual get up at 3 a.m. and start watching stuff. And so this is kind of fun for me. I'm going to have the opportunity to be able to actually listen to this stuff. I just checked real quick because we knew that it was going to be coming in pretty soon. I do not see anything on the MotoGP.com website for information about the hearing. So that is not yet resolved, although I'm sure.
No, I mean, I think Sepang is 6 or 7 hours ahead of us, so it's still fairly, it's only 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning, so I doubt if they'll be doing it yet.
Well, they're 16 hours ahead of me here, so
are they?
Yeah.
Oh, so they're 8 hours ahead of us. Okay. It's still only 7:20.
Yeah. Okay. Regardless, within the next few hours, we will probably have some information. I'm sure they're going to try and get that out of the way before they have the traditional Thursday press conference.
Mm-hmm.
Because of course if they didn't, all of the people in the press conference would be asking them about it. MotoPod Fantasy League.
Yes.
Yeah.
I actually looked quite excitedly, having Lowe's and Bridewell. I thought I've got a first and a third and a second and a third in BSB, and Gintoli's got a second and a third in World Super. But I've done really well. No, I dropped. I'm now down to 56th.
You're
on 60. You're 65th.
So you're 9 away from me.
Yeah, and you are 27 points behind me. Only 34 points behind you in 84th place is Jules. Now, then I had to do quite a lot of looking to find Harry and Dave. Now, Harry's 222nd.
Did you wear out the scroll button on your mouse?
Harry is 343 points behind me. Dave's 273rd, and he is 464 points behind me. I think Harry and Dave are two of those guys who entered a team at the beginning of the season and kind of forgot about it. I think Dave's actually got three of his six riders are people who are no longer employed in motorcycle racing. One of them is running a small penguin rescue colony in the Falkland Islands. And the other two have opened a sandwich shop in Gibraltar. Or maybe not. I think he's got three riders who are out injured at the moment. So, Harry, Dave, you meant to take this seriously, guys.
Well, I believe they probably will after being shamed into a horrible position. Mm-hmm. But as has been heard in the last couple of shows with those lads, I believe I have been pre-shaming them. So I think they know what's up. pardon me. Wow. Martin, just between the two of us, we have managed to put together a little bit, and I'm going to see if I can't get a couple of other lads on here to chat and break up some of our nut job ramblings. So,
fabulous.
Yes. Thank you for coming back on again. I actually did, in the middle of that, I heard Sharon in the background, so wave hi to Sharon. I know she had a birthday recently. You enjoyed your trip through Spain?
Yes. I did, and she's told me if I refer to us as a middle-aged couple one more time, she's going to stab me in the eye with a wooden spoon.
Oh, well, at least she's not using a fork. A titanium spork, as it were. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to yet another MotoPod. My name is Jim Race. I'm here with Martin Darlington. We did mention the donations. If you would like to help the show, please, thank you very much. You can do so by going to motopodcast.com. That's www.motopodcast.com. Left-hand side of the page, about halfway down, there is a donate link and a subscribe link. Those funds go to helping to pay for the infrastructure of the show, helping to pay for bandwidth, helping to pay for accreditation with the various agencies, and we're still working on that for 2013, not even thinking 2014 yet, and general accommodation and goods to keep this thing being delivered to you. So go to motopodcast.com. If you have any questions or you'd like to write into us, do so at motopod@motopodcast.com. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll chit-chat about it. We'll chit-chat about it on the air. Martin, I think that's it. Should we get this thing out of here?
I think we should.
I think we should. Good to talk to you again, man.
And likewise. Yeah. And good to be heard. I hope.
I think you were actually kind of excited about doing it.
Dear listener, both of you, actually. Yeah. Cheers, guys. And we will speak to you very soon. We've got, bang, bang, bang. We've got three, or as Jules said, boom, boom, boom.
Yep.
Let me hear me say, where you? stop. Sorry, I always forget I can't sing. But yes, no, we've got the three flyaway races, as I like to call them, coming up. And do you know what? It's weird. I remember when we were saying, wow, it's the start of the season. We've got all this racing to look forward to. Didn't that off-season seem like such a long time? Like, shit.
I know, we're getting into our wind down again.
We've got one World Superbike round left. We've got one BSB round left. We've got four MotoGP races left. And that is it for the winter.
We do, Martin, this every year. We're like, oh,
I know. Fuck.
But you know what? The thing about it is we get all melancholy and sad and all that crap.
And then we start some rumors.
Yeah, well,
and they keep us warm till the spring.
Well, we start rumors, but then we go into like our every couple of weeks shows that we do in like late November, December, early January. And we get all these amazing guests on because
that's true.
We trap them in their hovels when they're trying to rest with annoying people that have the opportunity to interview them and actually get some thoughts out of them. And we get some of our deepest and most interesting interviews during the off season.
And we have listeners who come up with some really, really good ideas of what we can do shows on. Do you remember the perfect track?
Ah, yes.
Out of that was born Steve Brooks and the Temple of Speed.
Yes. Speaking of which, Steve, where are you?
Yeah, Steve, we need some more.
We're coming up in the one,
particularly in the off season.
And we're coming up on it.
We had the best motorcycle films idea. I can't remember who that came from, but that was brilliant. That was a great episode. Anyway, dude, I've got to get out of here.
All right, get out of here.
Everybody, we will speak to you very soon. Thank you and good night.
Ciao. And you can do your own countdown.
Okie dokie. 5, 4, 3, 4, 3, 2, 1.